Well, Exodus chapter 2, where the Israelites have grown to such an extent that the new king of Egypt, Pharaoh, did not know the history or the real blessing that Joseph was to Egypt, and he sought to get rid of the Israelites by killing all the males. He gave instruction to the midwives to kill all the males so that they would not grow and join enemies or become greater than themselves. They were filled with fear. But thankfully, the midwives feared God. They were pro-lifers. And they did not obey the king's commandment because it was against God's commandment. Now, Pharaoh believed what they said, that the Hebrew women are stronger and more vigilant on the birth stools. And so he decided, well, he gave a command that all parents were to kill the male children and drown them in the river Nile. So let's look at chapter 2 here at the beginning. I'm going to read these 10 verses again because it's God's word. It's infallible. Now, a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the river bank. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her young women walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, because she said, "I drew him out of the water." Well, every single person is special in the eyes of God. I know there's millions and billions now of people in the world, but every single one's a creation of God, and are not only important, but precious to God. They're special. There's at least one, a particular special purpose for that person. One function they have to perform, at least one. Why they were born and created to fit into God's plan. That individual himself may not know what that special purpose is. You might not know the one great reason God has brought you into being. I might not know mine even. For Moses here, he didn't know for at least 80 years. For at least 80 years, his calling, he didn't have that calling that was to be the big thing in his life. The first 80 years of his life was a preparation for his main work. Yeah? His first 80 years were a preparation for his main work. Isn't that encouraging? Isn't that encouraging? D.L. Moody, great preacher, said Moses spent his first 40 years thinking he was somebody. He spent the next 40 years learning he was a nobody. And he spent the last 40 years learning what God can do with a nobody. And that's true of a lot of us. We think we may be something and we're not. And then God uses us when we're humble enough to accept the truth about ourselves. Now, the first few years of anyone's life are vital. Very, very important. It usually determines which way the child will go spiritually, depending on how he is brought up. What you are spiritually determines so much more for the rest of your life. Which way you go, which road you take, what choices you make, what you believe. Moses had the best possible start to life because he had godly parents. What a blessing. Godly parents. That meant he was prayed for, very likely, I'm certain, before he was born. He was prayed for before he was born. That happens today. Many Christians, as soon as they know the woman is pregnant, they pray for that child. Jonathan Edwards, a great Christian theologian, pastor in America, his wife, Jonathan Edwards' wife, used to read the scriptures to her unborn child. Isn't that lovely? That's faith, actually. That's faith in the covenant. She believed that every child born to a believer was the Lord's. So she was determined to train up her child in the way he should go with the truth, Holy Scriptures, that when he was old, he would not depart from it. Christian parents, tremendous blessing. Nothing better. In fact, the greatest privilege on earth a person can have is to bring up someone in the faith. Mothers, wonderful calling. Despised today, but a wonderful calling. Greatest privilege to bring up someone in the faith of the Lord. Now, that's not done in a moment. Even one of the chosen of God. We have to train a child. Train. No one's trained in the night at anything. Sport, business, anything. Training takes time and energy. The word for train means dedicate. As Paul said and wrote to Timothy, train yourself for godliness. Train yourself for godliness. You've got to practice it again and again. And when you make mistakes, learn from it, do it again. Train yourself for godliness. The word for train is the word gymnazo, from which we take gymnasium, which is energy, trial, and effort, sweat, and toil, and tears, isn't it? Now, God has so ordained that a child will listen to his parents initially. As soon as a child asks something, and it asks things as soon as it can talk, virtually, and its mum and dad tells it, give us the answer, it believes it. What you're taught in the early years, very, very hard, especially in religion, very hard to change, very hard to give up. It's very hard. I know a lot of people go away from the faith. But when someone has carried on in faith for a few years, a good few years, very hard to initially break away from that conviction and that belief. Very hard in old age when someone becomes converted to have to change their ways when their habits have been so formed. And that's why it's easier to become a Christian when you're young. Yes? It's easier. How hard it is in old age to change, even when you know it's necessary, and even when you know it's imperative. We must never forget, humanly speaking, that if the parents of Moses, Aram and Jochebed, were not faithful parents in covenant upbringing, if Amram and Jochebed were not faithful parents in covenant upbringing, Moses would not have been able to deliver the Israelites. if he did not have a faithful upbringing and not taught who he was, what the truth was, what the purpose of his life was, he wouldn't have been able to lead Israel out of Egypt. If they had not told Moses, there's only one God, Yahweh. He delivered us. He is the only living and true God. He saved our forefathers, and he's promised to save us. He has. He's promised to bless all the children of Abraham, and that if they just walk in his ways, they'll be blessed. They'll be blessed. But you must believe in this God. You must put your trust in this God. If you don't, you will lose the promises that God has given to you. Moses, they would say, God brought you into the world for a purpose. You must walk in his ways. You must not forsake him. If you do, you will lose all the blessings he has lined up for you. Now, faith, they had faith. They had tremendous faith. Faith is not optimism. I hope that things will turn out well. That's optimism. Faith is not just simply, I hope that things will turn out well. Faith is not positive thinking. Faith is not psychology. Faith is resting on what God has said, and then walking in the way of obedience. That's faith. Relying, resting, depending, trusting on what God has said. Not in your feelings, not what you think is right, but on what God has said, and then walking in the way of obedience. Taking God at his word. That's faith. Now, Moses was the third child of Amram and Jochebed. The third. Miriam, his sister, was the oldest, and she was about 12 or 13 at this time when Moses was born. Aaron, his older brother, was three at this time, roughly about three at this time. Now, the faith of Moses' parents is not mentioned here, but in the chapter we read in Hebrews chapter 11, it tells us there that by faith they were not afraid of the king's edict. They must have had faith. They were not afraid of the king's edict. They were quite prepared to take the risk of disobeying the state law in order to keep God's law. Right? It was a risk to disobey the state law in order to obey God's law. But they did it. And we as a nation may well be entering a time when such faithfulness will be very necessary if the church is to survive in our secular culture. Because the state laws are more and more becoming against God's laws. Now, when she saw that he was a fine child, verse 2, that the baby Moses was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. Now, it's interesting to note that it tells us here that she made the basket of bulrushes to hide it with bitumen and pitch, the same material that the ark, Noah's ark, was made of. And the pitch is the word for covenant. It's a word for cover, for covering and shielding and protecting and blessing us. And there is little Moses protected through the pitch of the basket that was made. Now we read that because she saw that the child, we read that she saw the child was that he was special. She had spiritual discernment. It wasn't something physical that was attracted her. He's a beautiful child. You know what, well, every child's beautiful, isn't it? Every, oh, lovely baby. She saw something spiritual, something special. She had spiritual eyesight. The Bible speaks of blindness and seeing in spiritual terms. Jesus said, I came into this world that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Now, there may well have been in Egypt a house-by-house regular search every morning. Any new babies born in the Jewish colony today? A voice would go round, perhaps. Any new babies? Am I hearing any crying? New babies? There may well have been such a regular search house by house. And Moses' crying may have been mistaken for Aaron's crying, but a time came when that no longer would work. And they realized that they would have to hide in a special way. They would have to do something special with Moses. Now, it's amazing, is it not, that in this passage, this wonderful passage of a special man of God being raised up to do a wonderful work in the history of the world, that the name of God is not mentioned. But as is the case with other parts of Scripture, like the book of Esther, God is not mentioned at all. But as Matthew Henry points out, God is all over it. His hand is here. His voice is not there. His name's not there. But his hand is there. And God's hand is here at work, although his name is not mentioned. God is over all. God is taking care. God is doing something special. He's present. It was a tremendous act of faith. Where she put the child? She put it among the reeds by the river bank, or as some translations have it, the River Nile. The bank of the River Nile. Well, that's where they're supposed to put to drown their babies. That's where they were to be put. So she took quite a risk. This is the work of faith, of course. The work of faith. Faith has works. Faith makes you do things, makes you live a special way, and to do feats, wonderful feats, full of faith. Faith will inevitably result in some expression of work, some achievement not otherwise possible without faith. Every Christian does something full of faith that they could not have done without that faith. Might not be a huge thing, but it'll be something that cannot be done without real, true faith. In Hebrews 11, we read there of the great heroes and the great things that they did, that their faith made them do. Not that works saved them, but the works that they did. But it was the result of their faith. Every Christian then does things by faith. And God tests that faith. He puts it through a trial, a difficulty. If you've got faith, it'll be tested. It will be put under pressure. It'll make you squirm. Now, Miriam, as we said, is about 13 years old, and that they had a scheme. They had a scheme. The mother and daughter had a plan. And Miriam was probably an unwilling accomplice in the scheme. Charles Swindoll imagines how they might have rehearsed time and time again the plan they were going to make. That they would put the bulrushes here, and that Miriam would be over there where the daughters of Pharaoh likely be. They would note where they were coming to the River Nile for their bathing and so on, and that she would stand there and they would have to go through it. And when they do this, you see that, and you can imagine Jochebed saying to Miriam, Stand over there now, honey. You stand there. Look surprised when they discover it now. I know it's not a surprise to you and you're hoping they're going to discover. Now, when it, look surprised. Look, and then you go in there. And when they say it's a Hebrew child, say, well, well, I get a Hebrew. That's all you've got to do, honey. Just you do that there. Leave the rest to me. Just you do that and run to me. I'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you here. All you have to do, I'll take over from there. Faith and works. Just because we have faith, just we're called to do something that we'll achieve, it's not going to be easy. It might be very hard. Can you imagine how she prayed? How Jochebed prayed as she laid the basket among the reeds? She would say something perhaps like this. O God of our father Abraham, keep this, your child, and grant that I might see him again. Use him, Lord, for your glory and purpose, and your people Israel. Destroy this wicked king's law of killing your people. And Lord, do remember Miriam standing over there, full of nerves. Help her play a role. Strengthen her. Keep her. Help her do what she has to do. Now, archaeological records show that Pharaoh's two daughters were co-regents of that part of the Nile where it happened. And in one of the digs that they discovered an oath, a popular common oath that was made to one of the gods of the Nile. And that oath was this, and this is something that the daughters of Pharaohs would know about and probably did use this oath. And this oath was, I have not withheld milk from the mouths of sucklings. I have not withheld milk from the mouths of sucklings. I have fed the hungry, thirsty baby. Thus she prayerfully placed the basket among the reeds, verse 4. She also knew that women would have a softer heart than men, more than her father, Pharaoh. And that they'd be more sympathetic, that the daughters would be likely more sympathetic, the mother's umbilical cord. So she is actually turned out, and it actually turned out that the baby was crying when they opened the basket. And she took pity. Here's the compassion of a mother, motherhood of a woman for the child. The baby was crying. She took pity on him. You see, faith works, employs means. Faith uses means. It doesn't avoid or abandon means. What will be is not something. You just believe in faith. Now, Josephus, not a Christian, but an accurate recorder of information, says that the princess asked all her maidens. The princess who found the child asked all her maidens, would they look after the child? But none of them were willing to look after a Hebrew child. Understandable. Especially with the king's commandment. But it required a different culture. And so it was then perhaps that Miriam called out, Will I get you a Hebrew mother who can look after the child? Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you? And she said, yes, go. So the girl went and called the child's mother. Now here's an amazing providence. I think it's fantastic. Whatever financial difficulties Moses' parents may have had, they were now gone.
I've actually heard parents say, we can't afford another child. I will pay your wages. Isn't that wonderful? I will pay, give you wages. Verse 9. Going to be cared for. What a wonderful providence. So he's actually now to get paid for looking after her own baby. Isn't that marvellous? Who could ever have dreamed of such a thing? Especially when you're a slave. Especially when you're a slave. See, God in providence. Maybe he's raising someone up now in some part of the world, friend. Some great hero. I hope you're praying for that. Because we need leaders. I hope there's someone in Britain being raised up who will lead us. A man of God who's been prayed for. So Moses, despite being brought up in Pharaoh's palace, was brought up in the faith by his own mother. She was able to convey to him the big secret. The big secret of who he really was. You don't really belong to the palace, Moses. No. She was able to convey to him who he was. He was a type of the Messiah to come, the great deliverer. She was able to prepare him for his unique calling which lay ahead of him. Moses' parents told him of his true identity. He was one of God's chosen people, a type of the Messiah. He was not to follow the ways of the Egyptians. He was to abandon their way of life, their beliefs, their philosophy, as he did. He was not to succumb to the temptations of that culture, and he did. All the treasures of Egypt, all the coins, all the different treasures of Egypt. He could dip his hand up to his elbows in wealth. He said, no, I'm not an Egyptian. I'm one of God's people. I've got a work, I've got a business to do. He was to say no to the tempting offers of the culture. He refused the treasures of Egypt. That was hard. But it was great. It was great. And every covenant parent has this great responsibility of giving to their children their true identity. You're one of God's. God has made special promises to you that he hasn't made to the world. You call on him, you follow him, he'll bless you. Don't leave him. You're finished. Covenant promise. Children of God's people have special promises that they're God's people. The covenant promise and relationship. It's not a matter of nature, it's a matter of grace. And that's why covenant promises, it works for adopted children. It's not through the blood, it's not through flesh and blood. It's through grace. It's through covenant promises. And adopted children are treated as God's covenant people under the care and shelter of praying parents who believe in God and administer the scriptures to the children. It's not a matter of DNA. It's a matter of God's spirit, God's promises. But we're not good at covenant keeping, are we? We're not good at covenant teaching. Even the Presbyterian Church. It's not good at it. I know we're not good at it. We treat our children as if they're pagans. It didn't happen here. He was a great man. Adopted children have all the promises and blessings of the covenant through entrance by their baptism into the covenant people of God, the church. And so all parents have this responsibility to teach their children. To teach their children what lies ahead. What's good and what's bad. What's right and what's wrong. The world out there is dangerous. The world out there will draw you. And you'll have an endless, useless life without a hope. Keep away from drugs. Keep away from this and that. Fear God and keep His commandments. It's the whole duty of man. The duty of parents to warn, to advise, to instruct. How to avoid the pitfalls. How to get blessings. It's our duty to instruct parents in that children in that way. What a great blessing. What a wonderful real story. Well, finally, the traumatic day. The traumatic day. That traumatic day came. What day? Well, that inevitable day that Jochebed and Amram knew, when Moses had to leave their home for good. She had to lead her son. They had to lead their son down by the hand, down the path to the palace and hand him over to Pharaoh's daughter. And he became her son. Verse 10. He became her son. But that's just legally. That's just legally. Covenantally. He was God's son. Child of God. They had the prayers of the parent. We all know. Parents, we know the trauma of a son or a daughter leaving home. Even when they're going to school for the first time. Tears come. They go on holiday away perhaps for the first time with some older boys or girls. And they go to university and stay away from home for a long period of time. Or whether they have to leave home for employment. Or whether they leave home for marriage. It's a traumatic day. And that's when you know, have you got faith? Can you commend your children to God? And you realise, have I done my job? The years that I had my family, have I done what I should have done? Have I told them the important things, the vital things? Is he ready to be put out the nest? The reality of living. These are things. How did she do it? How did she cope? Her faith in God. God's plan. God's purpose. God's promise. God's promise. She believed in the covenant promises, the blessings of God. She could commit her son. He's off there. I'll still be praying for you, son. Every day, I'll still be praying for you. What a great blessing he became. The birth of Moses. Well, may God bless to us these thoughts. Let's just read some of them. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the river bank. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. While her young woman walked beside the river, she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew's children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse a child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, "I drew him out of the water." And may God bless his word and truth to us. Let's have a few moments of silent prayer as we ask God to help us to keep our covenant vows and to be a blessing to all.